Business Network Show with experienced networkers and business owners, Jill Russell and Linda Cloak. Looking for the perfect stay in Maidstone? Discover comfort, style and convenience at Arida Hotels Maidstone. Whether you're visiting for business or a weekend escape, enjoy spacious rooms, a fully equipped gym, relaxing spa facilities and delicious dining, all under one roof. With easy access to local Kentish attractions and excellent service from check-in to check-out, your stay is in great hands. Book today at Arida Hotels Maidstone, where every visit feels just right.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. So I know all the words to that song. Does that say something, Pammy?
That's what you're shimmying away.
I know. So welcome to my guest. So Stuart Ruff, that song was for you.
Thank you very much indeed. Appreciate it.
And my other guest is Paula Doyle.
Hiya.
From Lighthouse Nutrition. Good to see you. And then, of course, we've got Chris Henry from Chris Henry Photography.
Hello, hello.
Hello. So we're going to be talking to Stuart first. So because we're a networking and events, you know, show, I thought I'd speak to you about the Thackeray Williams walks first.
Excellent.
Before we go into the divorce, you know, yeah, scenario. Yeah. Actually, I mean, some people I know have met at networking events. Yeah. That's a whole nother story.
Oh, really? What are we
gonna... It could be quite a good feeding ground for you there, sure.
That will.
So the walks, I mean, I've been on them. They're excellent. And they tend to be in National Trust properties, don't they?
Yeah, they do. That's right. So, I mean, they basically stemmed out of COVID when, you know, obviously life was very different. And Thackeray Williams thought, what can we actually do to get people out but still meeting at a suitable distance and all the rest of it that was required of us at the time? So we came up with this idea of the net walking, which was basically just to invite local business people to come along, have a nice walk around either Knoll, Chartwell or the Mount Vineyard, and go for about a 45-minute, one-hour walk outside, have a coffee and a pastry before and afterwards. And it was just something different. It was outdoors, it was exercise, it was while people were still cooped up at home. And it's been really, really well-received and really successful. Mm-hmm. So we've carried on doing it since all the restrictions were lifted. We usually get at least 40 to 50 as an average turnout each time. We do it on the last Friday of every month, and we do it on an alternating basis with, as I say, Knoll, the Mount and Chartwell. And at the end of last year, we added Penshurst Place to the list as well. So we've now got four venues that we do the walks at, and they're still very well attended. And it's a great networking opportunity because all walks of life, businesses, careers attend it. So there's a vast array of people coming along from all kinds of backgrounds and the work that they do. Mm-hmm. So there's an enormous opportunity to come along and meet people that you never know, spark a connection, see what happens, really.
Yeah, and you never know who you're going to end up walking with, do you? And it's, you know, it's great because you're walking around for just over an hour. You do get to move along and speak to different people as well.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, the way it works is you turn up and you have a mingle to start with.
Yes.
And you just end up naturally gravitating towards someone and having a chat, and then you'll start walking around with them and then just bump into other people throughout the walk. So it's all very natural, just bumping in. It's not standing awkwardly in a room or anything. It's far more natural and conducive to actually bumping in and meeting people and having a chat with them, and then see where that conversation leads.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed them when I've been. Have you guys been on any networking?
I've been on a couple of networks, yeah. Helen from the Good Stuff Folks runs one irregularly, and I think there were more dogs than people on the last one. It was quite nice. We sort of had a romp around the countryside. Yeah,
so it's been a couple. Yeah, really enjoyable.
And there's always a good icebreaker with the dogs.
Yes.
You know, even if you were a little bit unsure about how to approach someone to strike up that conversation, it's amazing, actually, the dogs act as a very good icebreaker in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Might be a good lead generator for you to do something like that.
Yeah, well, they're normally in the morning, though. That's the problem, because the club's in the morning. So
gives you an opportunity to start one that is not in the morning, I
guess. Yeah. That's what I was just about to say. Go on, give me another job.
Yeah, I was going to say, ours are in the morning. So ours, you've got the Whitstable one starts at 9:30 and the Maidstone one is 10 o'clock. So, well, starts at 10:30, I think.
Of course. I just realised I've been on this on two Synergy networking ones as well. Yeah, of course. See, it was the dogs that made me remember. The other
one. Yeah, so we're always in Moat Park, and we do the second Friday, funnily enough. I don't know why we chose a Friday, but, you know, it seems to be a good day. And I think a Friday afternoon might be quite a good one. Maidstone.
It's a nice way of leading into the walk weekend as well.
Yes.
Doing it on the Friday.
Yeah, it's really nice, actually, so. Friday afternoon. I wonder if there's a pub at the end of the route. That'll get people on it.
Yeah. Funnily enough, I'm going on one. I'm not going on our one this Friday. There's one that's been round Leeds Castle by Keir Construction.
Oh, fun.
So I'm actually going on that one. So, and also you've got another event coming up next Tuesday, 19th of May. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah. So on the 19th of May in our Bromley office, we're hosting a seminar for local professionals on currently there's a pilot being run in certain courts around the area relating to what's known as a domestic abuse protection order. Because back in 2021, the government introduced the Domestic Violence Act, and they wanted to obviously demonstrate their commitment to a zero tolerance approach to domestic violence. So they extended the existing powers that the law already had, something known as a non-molestation order, which was an order that people could get from the court, which basically prohibited someone from using or threatening violence against them, harassing, intimidating, or getting anyone to do so on their behalf. But they realised that didn't really go far enough, and there were certain requirements in order to be able to apply for it. So this 2021 Act introduced this Domestic Abuse Protection Order, which goes a little bit further, and it's currently being trialled in various places across the country, but in our area it's being trialled in Croydon, Bromley and Sutton, and the trial started in November 2024 and is expected to last for a couple of years, and it's actually just also started being trialled in North Wales and Cleveland as well. But the point with the Domestic Abuse Protection Order is it extends both the people who are able to apply for it, because under the old system, if I can call it that, although it's still very much in place, it was really the alleged victim who could apply for it. But now it's been extended, so a third party can apply for these orders on behalf of someone, the police can apply for the orders, and also a judge can make the order in an existing case if they think that it's necessary based on the circumstances of that case.
That must be very difficult, though, because a lot of the time in these situations, the person who is being abused doesn't want to leave the relationship.
Well, that's exactly right. And this is why finally it twigged that I'll refer to it as the old system, even though it's still in place, why that didn't go far enough. And it was appreciated, we need to beef this up. If we're committed to a zero tolerance approach to abuse, we need to be more forceful with it. And that's basically why this has come about. So hence now third parties can apply on behalf of someone, the police, judges, as I say. And it also extends what orders people can be subject to, because now, as part of these DAPOs, the Domestic Abuse Protection Orders, the courts can actually order electronic tagging. It can order attendance at drug and alcohol treatment courses and things like that. So it's not only getting the protective order in place, but it can also make requirements and stipulations as to other things that need to happen, rather than before just getting a court order saying to someone, you need to stop doing this behaviour. And then if they don't, you then have to go back to court to say, look, they've carried on doing what you told them to stop. Please deal with them, judge. So it's still being trialled. But the reason that we are running a course next week is for the local professionals to raise awareness of it, because it's still a relatively new thing that people are learning about. So we've got a district judge from Bromley County Court coming to talk to us about it and explain about it. So we're very keen to run these kinds of things, to not only for networking opportunities between the professionals, but also in a learning environment as well.
And can I ask, I mean, there's a lot, there's been big changes this century. When you said turn of the century, I was like, what's he talking about? And then I suddenly realised, oh, yes, there was a turn of the century. But there's been a big change in the way that people view mental health, hasn't there? And it's being recognised that abuse isn't just physical. Abuse is mental. Does this new law, is that incorporating the mental abuse that people give as well, which can be sometimes more damaging in a way?
Absolutely agree. I mean, it's always been the case that abuse extends way beyond just physical abuse. But it's sadly correct to say that people find it far easier just to recognise the physical abuse and much more difficult to recognise the psychological, emotional abuse that is often far more damaging in many cases
it
as well and longer
completely.
Lasting.
Yeah.
And it's something that certainly family law professionals are very alert to. The judges are very alert to. So when people talk to us about that, because they're experiencing difficulties and all the rest of it, we absolutely understand what's going on with it, and it is far more recognised now than it perhaps was a little while ago. And when you were asking a court to make an order, a court would find it much easier to make an order if you perhaps were able to produce a photograph evidencing something rather than going to the court trying to convince a judge to make an order on a psychological, emotional basis.
And presumably that's one of the reasons why the DAPO is in trial at the moment, because the evidentiary requirements for mental and psychological abuse is really difficult and kind of stringent. And it's easier in a way if the individual who's falling victim to that is able to come forward, or comes forward and makes a claim, because presumably they've reached a level at which they can't go on. So we'll be able to demonstrate that more easily. But often, I think when friends or partners or third parties come forward on behalf of somebody else, it's going to be difficult for them to evidence abuse going forwards. Hence, it's in trial at the moment.
Absolutely. Right? It could be. Right. Yeah, absolutely. So the reality is there aren't that many people that have had experience of applying for them yet, because it's still in trial. And the purpose of next week's seminar is to basically raise awareness of it and make people aware that it is a thing, it is available. And I think tying in with that point, sometimes, yes, it's very difficult for someone to take that step, to take advice, to get the protection that they need. But now, because it's been extended in terms of who can apply for it, it's not just the alleged victim themselves, then you can have someone else step in and realise there's a problem, because, of course, sometimes the person concerned doesn't necessarily realise there's a problem in their own right.
Yeah, absolutely. And where does someone stand if they're not actually married, if they're, living together? Is that relevant, or just because they're living together, is it not relevant?
No, absolutely. When it comes to things like this, it doesn't matter whether someone is married or is not married.
Okay.
The key thing here is basically the relationship context. So essentially anyone who's in a relationship with someone, or has been, because it can also apply to former partners as
Absolutely.
Well. So it's a relationship context rather than married versus unmarried context. Mm.
And I suppose that's a bit more modern as well, isn't it? Because so many people are choosing not to get married these days.
Absolutely. And the law treats married and unmarried people very, very differently. The reality is unmarried people have very, very few claims against each other. And you could end up in a situation where you're together for 20 years and a relationship breaks down. And the only legal claim that you have is potentially in relation to the house. There's no obligation for someone to maintain their former partner. So if someone has taken time out of work to look after the children and raise the children or something, they've obviously spent a period of time out of the workplace. In an unmarried context, there's then no obligation for them to sort of have any financial recompense, as it were, to reflect that. And that's something that is always a very hot topic in family law, cohabitation law reform, because it's simply not a fair system with the division.
No.
And there's a national organisation called Resolution, which the vast majority of family lawyers are members of, and they push very hard for cohabitation reform. But unfortunately, for whatever reason, the particular government of the day never really seems to have much appetite to push forward with it.
Wow, what a shame.
That's really interesting, because cohabitation is
equivalent to marriage in different... Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's gone funny. Okay.
Cohabitation is...
That's it.
Loose. Loose on the microphone. I will keep on talking and hope putting people off on the internet. and just not touch the microphone, move away. So for example, when claiming benefits, it doesn't matter if you're separated or not, as long as you're living together and in a partnership, it doesn't matter whether you're married. But if one person claims a benefit, the income level of the couple is what's taken into account.
I've got no idea.
Oh, I do. It's not a question. And so that obviously has seen some reform at some stage, and I have no idea when the law was changed in order to take that into account. But there seems to be a disparity in that case where that's that, to all intents and purposes, you're assumed that you're a, you know, long-term relationship where you've mixed your finances. And I think it's after 6 months. Whereas, as you're saying, like the law in terms of family law hasn't kept up with that. There seems to be a disparity.
Oh, very much so. And yes, you hear from time to time some horror stories in the press about these scenarios where people have been in an unmarried relationship for a very long period of time, and then it's come to an end, and then financially it's had, you know, very, very difficult outcomes for one person, whereas if it had been a marriage, the result would have been dramatically different. So, and yes, you're absolutely right. More and more people are cohabiting now. And it's disappointing that there hasn't been that appetite for reform. It's just something the government of the day is just not that bothered about pursuing. Yeah. Seems to have other priorities.
Yeah. Okay, we're probably best off not talking about that. Let's talk about your team. So, you know, you've got a team that work with you, and it's quite a big team, isn't it, Stuart?
Yeah, it is. No, we're very lucky. We've got a very good breadth of experience. We spread ourselves across our Bromley and Sevenoaks offices, but ultimately we tend to service people in London and the South East, basically. We do have clients overseas, but we essentially do the main areas of family law, so we assist people when a relationship breaks down, mainly around both resolving the financial side of things, but also the children's side of things.
Yes.
But we also assist people at the beginning of relationships, because some people go into relationships wanting to regulate a relationship at the beginning. And particularly now, where people are perhaps whether it's a second marriage or they might have been given money by their parents or something, they're thinking about wanting to protect that money going into a new relationship. So we're also finding an increasingly large number of people coming to us at the beginning of a relationship to say, look, is there any way that I can ring fence this particular money that I'm bringing in, or this property, or whatever it might be? So when people talk about family lawyers, divorce lawyers, whatever you want to call us, they always tend to think of us at the end of the process when it's all gone wrong and people need help to sort things out. But we're increasingly finding that we're being used at the beginning of relationships as well, as effectively wealth protection advisors as well.
That's a tremendously cynical approach to go into a relationship with, isn't it? I mean, the assumption that you're going into a relationship and the person with whom you might be is it might be getting in there to steal your money. Do you find that is that really an increasing number of people?
I think people are now far more aware that, sadly, the statistics for relationship breakdowns are significant.
Yeah.
They are high. The reality is a large number of relationships, for whatever reason, do fail. And I think a lot of people are very aware of that. Of course, the internet makes people aware of things as well, and particularly with the increase in Bank of Mum and Dad as well, often it will be them saying, well, look, we're thinking of giving you this, but... So it's not necessarily the people themselves in the relationship. It can be the Bank of Mum and Dad saying, go and do it. So I think it's an all-round position. I fully appreciate it's not necessarily the most romantic approach to it.
When one gets down on one's bended knee and says, my darling, can you sign this prenup? Before we go on our first date.
I mean, well, someone once described it effectively as a bit of an insurance policy.
Sure.
You hope you don't need it, but you could end up being very glad you have it if you do need it.
And if you both love each other, to be fair, there shouldn't be any problem with it, because, you know, if you both do, is love still a thing?
Actually, for the listeners, I'm going to talk about photography and lovely, pretty stuff later rather than try and lift the mood of this.
We lighten the mood as the show goes on.
Right, yeah.
You should understand that somebody wants to, is what I'm saying. If you get a couple of my age getting married, you know, they've been through, maybe a man might have been through two divorces, and, you know, he's had to build everything up from scratch twice. And then, you know, meet someone a third time and it's like, is this going to be dodgy? You know, all looks great on the surface now, but what's going to happen? So maybe when you're younger, but I think maybe when you're older, people are a bit cynical.
How would you know, Linda?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
She was young once.
I do, yeah.
And is now.
But I do hear a lot as well, because obviously I've got a lot of friends that go through this situation. Some of the stories you hear, you know, it's quite hard for a lot of men as well. They, especially if they've given the house and everything because the wife's got the children, and they've literally started again. It's quite tough, because they've got to build it up from the bottom, and they don't want to. I know some men that have lost it all twice, and then they've had to do it all again. So that's you know, I don't know any women that have lost it all twice, but I'm sure you're out there. Oh, there's one. So what other is it? Sort of just the divorce and the family, and what about you know, do you do wills and probates? Does that come under it?
Yeah, we do. I mean, Thackeray Williams is a full service law firm that can basically deal with anything an individual or a business would need. So, and one of the advantages of that is that we're able to deal with things under one roof. So, yes, if someone needs some conveyancing, or they need a will, or they need help with probate, or they need employment advice, or if they're a business owner and they need help with commercial property issues or corporate commercial things, we can do all those things for people, which is obviously really helpful, because it means that we can keep it all in-house rather than having to then farm them off somewhere else that, you know, we don't necessarily know you know, what that might be like. So being a full service firm, we're able to keep all of that under the same roof and help them all without them feeling being shunted from pillar to post.
Because one of the other things, actually, talking about divorce, is that, you know, with a lot of people, if they are in the situation, say, where they own the house and they choose to fall in love with someone who's got nothing, they don't want, when they die, for that person to be chucked out the house and the kids have it, and suddenly the person that they've spent the last 20 years with is out, you know, out with nowhere to live. So they quite often will say, well, this person can stay in until they die, and then it goes to the family rather than...
Absolutely, and we find ourselves working very closely usually with our private client team about the wills and the tax side of things as well, and whether or not people want to set up trust arrangements or something like that, absolutely. And that, again, that's one of the advantages. We're able to pick each other's brains very easily, and we've got an awareness of what the issues are, and if it's a case of, okay, we'll flag this issue, but actually I need to speak to one of my colleagues to just run it past them to get the answer, then that's what we can do, and it's nice and easy because we're all under the same roof.
Okay. And you said that you've wanted to do this since you were a young man, and you've just carried on doing it.
Yeah, if I can remember back that far. Yes, I mean, gosh, I mean, I've been doing this now for... just over about 25, 26 years now. Okay. Yeah, law was something that always interested me. I can't remember precisely why or how. It was just something I came across one day and thought, that sounds really interesting. And so rather set myself on that career path as an ideal, and fortunately enough managed to achieve it.
That's fantastic.
And, yeah, I've been doing it for that, and... hopefully I won't have to do it for another 25 years. I might be able to retire at some point in the next 25 years, but we'll have to wait and see.
So what's your favourite bit of doing what you do?
I think often people, when I first meet people, they won't necessarily be in a particularly great place doing what I do. They are potentially emotionally vulnerable. They are almost always very uncertain about what the future holds for them. But then by the end of my involvement with them, when we've worked together and got them through the process, they're in a much better position and they have a great deal more certainty and confidence about the future. And that, for me, seeing that transformation, that journey, that process, is very rewarding.
Yeah, I can imagine that. You've sort of changed someone's life, haven't you, and made them more confident about their situation.
Yeah.
How long does it take, or is there no...
There isn't. It all depends on whether or not people are able to agree things between themselves, or whether, sadly, they end up having a big argument. If it ends up in the court arena, then you could easily be looking at 12 to 18 months if you go through the entire process. If people manage to agree things, then it's much shorter. But within the actual divorce procedure context, that process itself, even though it's an online form-filling exercise, that still takes a six-month period in any event. So realistically, you could be looking at anywhere between 6 months to 2 years, depending on the level of agreement and cooperation that exists.
Wow. Okay, so when we're talking about people reaching out to you, Stuart, how would they get in touch with you?
There are a number of ways. I mean, they can either contact me through the Thackeray Williams website, which has got my personal contact details on, including my direct dial phone number. They could always have a look and a search for me on LinkedIn as well and send me a message via LinkedIn. Those would be usually the two most usual ways, either LinkedIn or an approach via the work website.
Okay. And when somebody's going to approach you, how does that normally happen? What do they normally say? Do they normally say, I'm going to get divorced? Do they say, I'm planning to get divorced? What do they...
Sometimes they don't actually even know the answer to that. Sometimes they just think, my relationship's not in a great place. I'd like an idea about what's involved if I decide to do this.
Ah, okay.
So some people obviously will come along and say, I need a divorce, or I'm having an argument about the children, sadly, or whatever. Help. But other people are perhaps planning a little bit ahead and thinking, well, I think it's on, you know, rocky grounds. It might come to an end. I want to arm myself with some information so that I know what's involved if it does.
Yeah, that's clever. Okay, well done. Thank you so much, Stuart. That was
a
really interesting interview.
Thank you.
So we're going on to that from the nutrition of love to the nutrition of the body.
Nicely done. I like it. That was very smooth, wasn't it?
Oh, we love each other as well.
So tell me, how did you get started on this journey at Lighthouse, Paula?
Well, I had basically, I've got diabetes, and my doctor basically gave me a bit of a telling off and said, like, your diabetes is well out of control. It was 108, and I think a normal person's 44.
Wow.
And my cholesterol was 5.8. My blood pressure was through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
So he was saying about, you know, the next step's going to have to be insulin. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. Just leave it with me. And I tried everything, you know. I tried all the various other diets, et cetera. And they all work. I'm very much a player of the field. They all work in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't stick to it. And I'd lose a couple of stone, and then I'd fall off the wagon, and then I'd have to start another one. And, you know, I sort of was in and out all the time. And my husband turned around and said, you need to speak to this woman. So I went along to Adele at the Health Hut, and I literally went in there saying, you know, this isn't for me. Or, you know, I was completely the opposite of what you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, just do it for 2 weeks. Just do it for the 2 week induction and see how you go. Which I did. And I lost half a stone. And I thought, oh, okay, perhaps there is something in there. So I signed up for another month's membership, still with the intention that I wasn't going to carry on. And then I then lost more weight and more centimetres, and then I ended up going from a size, well, a really, really tight size 18. If I'm really realistic, it was a 20, and then I'm a size 10. But my sugar levels, which is the main thing for me, the sugar levels are now 50, so I'm aiming to get to the 44 so I can actually reverse it. My cholesterol's now 1.5, and my blood pressure's returned to normal. And it's just through doing this.
Those are the stories that warm your heart, aren't they? Because, you know, when I introduced people, so I was there for a year, and when I introduced people into it, and I saw one guy, he came in, and I think it must have been a year later, Adele and I both wore his trousers around the health hut. So we both got into a pair of his trousers.
There's been a few of them.
Yeah, and but the main thing for him was he was walking on a walking stick, had really bad diabetes. And, of course, officially, you're sort of not allowed to say any of this stuff, are you? But no. The thing is, the facts are in front of you. You had someone who was struggling to walk and needed a walking stick, and then suddenly this man is walking in. You know, I knew him because I go on the back of a motorbike with him.
So he's a biker, yeah.
He's a biker. And it was just like, you know, it was amazing, the difference. And I said to him, is it better now? We're both lighter. He was like half the man that he was. But, you know, his blood pressure is normal now. He hasn't got diabetes anymore. It's completely reversed it. So it was an amazing results. He suffers with arthritis. There was even a positive impact on that. You know, that was getting better.
You can do everything. It's not just the weight thing, you know, because it's the whole point of it is nutrition. So it's not a diet. And I think once people realise that it's not a diet, it's a nutrition plan. And it's about getting the nutrition right in your body, and that will help loads of stuff, not just your weight. You know, a lot of women, especially menopausal, you know, they've seen improvements on that. It definitely is with the mental health side of things, you know, because people start to get more confident and they feel better in themselves. And you know, within sort of like 3 days, I couldn't believe how alert I was. I didn't realise that I wasn't alert, I might add, and I would never admit that I wasn't alert either, but it just literally made me so much more aware of myself. And then, as I say, then I got sort of coloured into, you know, do I want to be a coach? And I was like, no, you're right. It's not for me. It's not for me. And in the end, I was a coach. And then I ended up being a junior partner and then ended up opening my own club, the Lighthouse Nutrition. So it was a bit sort of like from going in there absolutely against everything to then running my own club.
So really sort of good times. Have you ever struggled with your nutrition at all, Stuart, or have you always been quite good?
I think the interesting point there, I think, was the way that you described it, because it's almost the mindset, isn't it? You said it's about the nutrition, it's not a diet. And I think that seems to be, certainly from my point of view, the biggest stumbling block. It's the mindset about how you approach this, isn't it? The making the mindset as to this is how I'm going to be going forwards, rather than thinking it's a diet, it's about the nutritional side of things. And having that determination and dedication to stick to it.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really interesting
point. I think this, with a lot of people, they are really, you know, as I was, which I didn't realise, I was quite depressed about it. And I think once you start to speak to people and you understand where they are, where they're at, and it's all about just changing small things. Rather than, you know, going and running a marathon, it's like, let's change the small things. Let's do it gradually. Let's just make better choices rather than people going in, right, you've got to eat a lettuce leaf. Well, that's not my bag. I don't eat that sort of stuff. And I think once you get past that and they realise that, oh, well, they haven't got to sit and eat lentils and chickpeas and you know, salad all the time. I think once they get past that and you go, no, actually, we're teaching you about food, because that's the most important bit, is because we're collectively over the years, we've been told this is bad for you, then we're told this is good for you, and this has got too much fat in it, and then then it's like you've got to have fat-free or you've got to have all fat, or it's sugar-free or full sugar. And everybody's got to the point now where you don't know right from wrong. And I think once you start to sort of speak to people and go, right, okay, so what is your normal day? What you explain to me what you would have in a day. And when they actually tell you what they're eating for the day, 9 times out of 10, they're not eating enough. 9 times out of 10, they're not eating it at the right times. They're going without breakfast, which is the worst thing, because if you think about your metabolic rate, you know that the minute you start eating is when that will start. So if you don't have breakfast, your metabolism isn't even starting, isn't even kicking in until you have that first bit of food. So if you don't eat till 11 o'clock, that's when your metabolism's going to start burning. It's common sense in a lot of ways, but we've just been programmed to do things so differently. And we've now, I think as a society, we've all just got confused with what we can and what we can't.
So, Paula, what about parents that, you know, because you hear from a lot of schools that a lot of children go into school, into breakfast club, and they haven't had any breakfast. They go into school, they haven't had any breakfast. And quite often, it's only if they do go to breakfast club that they get a breakfast. Yeah. And then they get to the stage where actually they don't want a breakfast because they're so used to not having a breakfast.
Yeah, it's just trying to change their mindset with it. And I do think, you know, with kids as well, if you explain to them in a reasonable way of what actually happens, they would probably go, oh, right, okay, so I should have it then.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's because they've got busy parents perhaps and they're rushed out the door in the morning and it might be, you know, picking up a bag of crisps on the way to school, that sort of thing, you know, which it happens, you know, it's life. And I think that's where we need to sort of look at things of looking around people's lives and what we can change slowly throughout. And then they'll get the end result. Mm. But trying to do everything all at once, it's like saying, right, okay, here's a blanket thing. This is what we've got to do. This is how you've got to do it. It doesn't work for everybody. Everybody's individual. It's like different, like your calorie counts are totally different.
One of the things that surprised me when I was coaching was that you'd get someone come in and they look normal, if you want to say that, like they haven't gained any weight and they haven't. And then they get on the scales and then they've got a lot of visceral fat around their heart, yeah, and around, you know, around their vital organs. And that was quite a shock to me because I, you know, I would always look on the surface and say, well, you know, they don't have to worry because they're not overweight. But actually, everyone needs to be looking at what they're eating, because if they're eating the wrong stuff, then they've got to worry about their internal organs, haven't they?
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, they could, as you say, come in and look like they don't need to do anything. But when you actually look inside, as we have these scales that literally goes through the body and it tells us how much visceral fat, which is the dangerous fat, as you said, it's around all the major organs, they can still have that. Mm. Even though they appear to be, you know, quite small in frame, should we say. Mm. And it's that sort of getting over that to sort of go, okay, so you might be feeling that you're fit and you go to the gym and all of these things, but actually you don't know what's going on inside. And when we actually do look what's going on inside, we can actually say, right, okay, well, we've also got the sports performance stuff. You know, if you've got someone that's going to the gym all the time, you know, are they putting the electrolytes back in their body?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which they're burning when they're at the gym. It's all things like that which we don't think about. We just think, right, okay, you know, there it is a hand in hand. You need exercise. You know, a lot of people say about, you know, about gyms, but no, you do need to have exercise as well as.
Well,
nutrition.
I was walking every day. So because I was walking down to the health hut every day and walking home, so, I mean, I think it's about 7,000 steps in total, which isn't the 10,000 even.
Mm.
But it really helped me just walking down into town, walking back again.
And it's good for your mental health as well.
Mm.
You know, it's you know, it puts the endorphins and all that scientific side of stuff into you. So you've got to have it, but on the same strength, you can't have one without the other, because – you could go to the gym five times a week, but if you haven't got the nutrition right, then you're not going to get the results that you want from the gym.
Mm. Mm.
So it's got to go hand in hand with each other, you know. And I wanted to help more people, and especially from, you know, obviously I've seen the health benefits myself. I didn't go into it to lose weight. I went into it because I needed to sort my health out.
Mm.
But I've lost, you know, lost it on the way. So that's quite a nice bonus. Thank you very much. but then, you know, the only way I could really reach out to help more people was actually opening my own club. Mm. So that's when we opened Lighthouse Nutrition in November last year up in Maidstone. So, but yeah, I love it. I mean, today I've had two reviews that I've done today, and one lady, she's continually stuck to the plan, and she's just transforming herself. She's just looking stunning now.
So how long has she been on it for?
Since January.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she lights up the room when she comes in. She's a pleasure to work with. Does everything that she's supposed to do. Yep, we do. She still falls off the wagon every now and again, but this is what I've always said, is this has got to fit into your life. Because there's no point you saying you've got to do this, 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 and this, and then you can't go and have, you know, you can't go and have a ruby, for instance, or, you know, you can't go and have a bit of birthday cake, you know, when it's your birthday, or go out for a meal when it's your birthday. But these things, they come up in life, and you've still got to be able to do them. It's just like, right, okay, so we've got that coming up. So let's look at, i.e., can we get the menu beforehand and have a look at the menu? And then I just literally go, right, so what would you think out of all of that would be the better choice? And let that person make that decision. And then I would just go, well, yep, that's a good choice, but that one would be slightly better, you know. And it's things like that. So you're not they're adults. You don't need to be telling them what they should be doing and shouldn't be doing. You know, it's not like I'm a teacher, and it's got to be so that it's more comfortable for them, because they will continue to do it if they feel that they're not being told off.
Sounds like you're an enabler, and in a positive sense, or like you're providing some kind of accountability to them as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because at the end of the day, I mean, they all know me, and I do, you know, it is quite a fun place to be, and I do muck about quite a bit. But they also know that if I say something and I say, well, you know, that weren't good, was it? You know, and I sort of just, I smile and then just give the look.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's normally enough. And then it's just like, right, okay, so we know we shouldn't have done that, but, you know. We'll try better, you know. But as I say, it's you're adults, you know. You don't want to feel that you're going somewhere, one, that it's miserable, and two, that you're going to get told off, because why are you going to do it?
Yeah.
You ain't going to bother going if you're going to get told off, are you?
The other thing, actually, is that, you know, we're on the networking show, and it's the business networking show, but really you are networking every morning, and you're building a community, which is what networking does. You know, you're building a community with your networking events.
Yeah.
You probably find that a lot of people come along every month to the walk. It's the same people, because they want to come because they want to meet people, you know, that they've seen last month.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's the motivational factor behind it, isn't it? You stay motivated because you're seeing the results, whether it's of the nutrition and the new way of life and the effect that's having, or whether it's the meeting, the new connections, and seeing where that takes you. It goes hand in hand, doesn't it? The motivation is there because of the results that you're getting from it. You're getting the results, so you stay motivated, and it's that little cycle.
Yeah, and I think with the community as well, where everybody, they all get to know each other and they're all sitting there chatting and putting the words to rights and stuff. And then when they're doing, like, their reviews, so every 10th visit, we do a full body scan again, and then we look at what they was before, what they are now, and what's improved, and what we're going to set as goals for the next 10 visits. And we then, with the group, we'll either do a video or we stand up with the member and say, look, you know, this is what they've done this week. Look how wonderful they've done with their body fat, etc. And everybody cheers everybody on. You know, everybody's, like, excited for them. I mean, a lady this morning, bless her, she's our newest member. She's only been with us a week and she's already lost half a stone. And she got her half a stone award. Wow. Today, so good old Tracy, she got her Alpha Stone award, and we was just absolutely over the moon with it. You know, it's just, we celebrate, and I get so much self gratification, if you like, out of seeing somebody's face. You know, nine times out of ten, they've walked in the door when I first met them, and they've been miserable, like you were saying with your client, and they're as miserable as sin. And then you see them on their journey, and as they're, you know, whether it's losing weight or getting better shape and things like that, and then all of a sudden they are absolutely beaming, and they're skipping up the stairs and just bursting in the door, and everything. So it's all like skipping lambs, you know, in the lamb season. I just get such a kick out of that. It's just like, it's so lovely to see how someone's, and they've done it themselves. I'm just there to facilitate it with them. They have done the do, and then literally they've gone from being miserable to being really happy. And that just makes me happy. And that makes it worthwhile.
Well, well done, Tracy.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So, Paula, what types of people would you say that you're looking for to maybe refer people into you? So tell me, first of all, where your new club is, where you meet.
Yep, so the Lighthouse Nutrition is at 5 Kings Row, and that's in Armstrong Road in Maidstone in Kent.
Mm-hmm.
We're right next door to the hockey club, so you can't miss us. Types of people? Anybody.
Yeah.
Absolutely anybody, because it can be, as I say, anybody going to the gym. I mean, our sports performance stuff is created.
Ronaldo.
Yes, Cristiano Ronaldo.
Mm-hmm.
And he's invested in part of the company as well. So, you know, it's done at the elite. You know, we've got triathlons, loads of people that are actually on the product. So,
it's really great for sports people, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant. As I say, it's really good to go alongside with people that go to the gym. We've got people that are mums that have just had babies and want to get back into, you know, the jeans again and things like that. we've got dads that have come because they feel that they want to be able to run around with the kids. So they've had the baby and now they're thinking, right, I need to sort myself out because I want to be going and playing football or, you know, things like that. You've got the busy mums, you've got the, as I say, corporate people, work people that are going, they pop into me because we start at 6:30 in the morning.
Nannies.
To 11. Yeah, nannies, yeah. So it's ideal if you've got people that are going to London, for instance, they can come in early, have their breakfast, do all their food diaries, and then they can be off and away on the train up to London. So it suits them as well.
That's a good way of making sure they don't skip breakfast and they get the metabolism going as soon as possible.
Exactly, yes, straight away, first thing in the morning. And then you've got the next lot. So you've got the mums that come after school run, and then you'll have what I call my goldens that will come, and they'll come and they'll sit and they'll have a chat, and they come because it's a community thing, you know. They meet their friends there, and they can have a good chat, and you know, and still get themselves healthier, so that they live longer and things like that. So it can go with anybody really, and I love them all. So I'm welcome to have anybody. I love them all.
So how do people get hold of you if they're interested in finding out more about how you can help them?
So they can either go on to Facebook, Lighthouse Nutrition, Instagram, Lighthouse, or they can just do the old-fashioned thing and give me a call.
And what's your number?
07936-443-025.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Paula. That was really interesting. And, you know, I know how many people you help, so it's good to see. It's nice, isn't it? Yeah, really good. So we're going to I'm going to do a couple of adverts, and I'm now going to do a song, actually. So your song is coming on last, Paula. We're playing out to your song. But the song that we're going to be playing is Photograph by Def Leppard for our next interviewee. So we're going to be doing that now. So a little bit of a comfort break. We will be back shortly. See you soon.
At Absolute Protection Group, we specialise in domestic, commercial and industrial electrical, fire and security systems, ensuring the highest quality of service and safety for all your needs. Let us be your trusted partner. Contact us today for a consultation, as if you want protection, you want Absolute Protection. Go to absolute-group.co.uk or call 01622 437838.
Do you need a reliable property management service or lettings agent? PJJS is a well-established property management and residential lettings company in Maidstone, Kent, which deliver an effective and efficient quality service. Call us now on +44 78 55 746 966.
Tired of business networking that feels like hard work? It shouldn't be a chore. It should be a chance to grow. Join the Synergy Business Community and connect with like-minded professionals right in your area. We provide the opportunities to boost your brand's visibility and growth without the stress. Stop wishing for better contacts. Start building them. Visit synergynetworkingevents.co.uk today or call us at 07769943756.
Too much, you're the only one. I- heard of IT headaches? Slow computers, security worries, lost files. Sound familiar? We've got your back. As Kent's leading IT support partner, we keep your business running smoothly, securely, and stress-free. Call 0179-534-2362 now and get your IT sorted.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. So I'd just like to give Metro Bank a mention, actually, this morning, because we're working with Metro Bank in Canterbury and in Ashford. We were at the Canterbury venue this morning, so Metro Bank there. And as you know, Canterbury is such a beautiful city. So it starts at 10 a.m. there, and then we're going to be with them every other month. So we're doing Canterbury. The next one is going to be the first Wednesday in July. So going forward from July, we will be doing Metro Bank on the first Wednesday of the month from 10 until 12. And we're actually in Ashford. The next one there is going to be on the 24th. Metro Bank networking is a really relaxed, come in, chat. They provide pastries and fruit, and they have tea and coffee, and also apple juice, orange juice. So, you know, you can come in, have some breakfast, and it's just really a natural way of chatting to people. So we had Canterbury Christchurch University there this morning. They were looking for businesses to come and work with some of their students. So we had a real good mix of businesses there this morning, and it was absolutely excellent. So then this evening we're actually at Whitstable, and sadly one of our venues told us last week they were unable to host the events anymore. But the lovely Charlie Lays at Riverside Church stepped in, and we are going to be at Riverside Church now going forward. And that's going to be tonight at 18:30. We're in Whitstable, Riverside Church, for our networking event there. Now, again, Riverside Church is a really relaxing environment, and you can put an advert on the TV there if you want to. It's really a fantastic venue for conferences. I know Simply Business are actually going to be doing an exhibition there. So it's just a fantastic venue if you're looking to do anything really, you know, business-wise, then really fantastic venue. So I won't go through all of our events, but just to let you know that next Monday we've actually got our event at the Arida Hotel. So that's our normal networking event on Monday the 18th at 18:30. The Arida Hotel are one of our patrons, so they've actually got an advert on the radio show, which is fantastic. So we're always looking for more patrons. If anyone's interested in becoming a patron of Synergy, there are lots of benefits, and one of them is that you do get an advert on the radio. So as I say, we're there at 18:30 on Monday the 18th for our evening networking there. We're doing our walk actually this Friday, and that's with Chris and Laura. So they do Moat Park. So that starts at 10:30. And yeah, there's quite a lot of dogs on that walk as well. And I'm actually doing something new tomorrow. I'm doing online networking. Now, I did do this when we first launched, but now we've got 180 members. I thought I will do it again. So what we're doing is we're starting at 12. And the reason that we're starting at 12 is because a lot of my members are saying that they're doing posts on LinkedIn, Facebook, etc., and they don't seem to be getting a lot of, you know, views. So what we're going to do is we're going to go in, and I'm taking in a little bit of my We Do Social Media learning, I suppose, over the 10 years that I ran that business, and I'm going to be helping them to show them how to get more engagement on their own posts. That'll be the first half an hour. The second half an hour from 12:30 until 1, we're going to have Becky from NetHub. So that's our actual app that people can use. Now, it's got so many different functions on this app that many of the members, I'm sure, are not using. So they've got the ability to track the business that they receive and pass on this app. They can also put posts on the app to increase their visibility, which is a really good thing for people to do in their business if they're looking to spread the word. There's over 4,000 people on the NetHub app, and many of them are businesses across Kent that are not members of Synergy. So it's definitely worth putting a post on there. And, you know, if it doesn't get seen, it doesn't get seen, but chances are it will be seen. So, you know, you could say that about any of the big social media places as well. So we've also got one of our members started doing their own networking event last year, and that's the lovely Lisa Peary and Steph Nicholson, and they do an event, and that's next Thursday the 21st, and it's called Pints and Prosecco. It's held at the Boathouse in Strood. It's a really relaxed event. You came last month, didn't you?
Yeah, no, it's been really good. A lot of people that you don't normally see at any other networking.
No, that's right. You're all right. So yeah, they really are great events, and the girls are fantastic hosts, really friendly. So if you're looking to do something a little bit different next Thursday evening, then that's a brilliant event. We've also got our summit coming up, so that will be 108 people at the summit. We've already got over 70 people booked on, and the summit is lots of businesses coming in, so we'll have three sets of synergy style networking taking place. The Arida Hotel are sponsoring the event, so all the food and drinks are being provided by them, which is brilliant. So we've also got a few more collaborations coming up, and that is on Wednesday the 3rd of June. We're collaborating with Maidstone Borough Council to provide free training on mastering your networking skills to start-up businesses. And startup businesses need help in so many areas. We're going to be talking to Chris in a minute. And many of them, I'm sure, well, even established businesses, do not have a proper headshot on LinkedIn. So we'll be talking a little bit about that. It's really, really important to have a good headshot. And I mean, I've seen pictures of people on tractors on LinkedIn with no shirt. So
we're not farmers.
I know. No.
Not guilty.
Not guilty. So, you know, that's really, really important. But I'm not there to talk about social media. Zoe Cairns is going to be doing that at an event on the 18th of June. And that's an FSB event where they're going to have stands. They're going to have speakers. It's an educational event, really. They're calling it a boot camp. And the girls, Alison and Jane, did a talk this morning at the Metro Bank event. But the actual event is starting at 9 a.m. at the Inn on the Lake. That comes under Gravesend, I think. And that's got stands there. And then we are doing a free networking from 3 o'clock onwards at that venue. So that's going to be great. And then last but not least, I want to mention that we're also collaborating with KCC Trading Standards. And we are providing a trades-only event. So this is really important because I don't know if any of my guests here have ever experienced what BNI call power teams. But what you generally find when you go to a BNI event is that the main power team in any of their chapters is the trades power team. And they generally are really, really strong. And that's because trades are brilliant at collaborating with each other. They work together. They pass each other business. And Trading Standards have been, you know, talking about doing this for all of their members for some time. And they came to us at an expo that we were at and asked us to actually collaborate with them and run the event. So we're going to be running the event for them. So we're looking at being 36 different trades in the room. My son actually has been inviting lots of people, bless him. So there'll definitely be an external cleaner there if anyone needs one of those. So
good old Clokey.
Yeah, good old Clokey. So I'm going to start with the LinkedIn profile picture, Chris. Sure. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it, how many people do not have a proper profile picture?
Yeah, and I mean, it's probably not all that important for absolutely everybody. You know, good old Clokey can probably get away, yeah, you know, with having a photograph of him doing it on site or something. Mm. But I think if you're in the professional services world, certainly, you know, you need to put your money where your mouth is, and you need to look like you mean business. And I think probably more than looking like you mean business, it's you need to be recognized. You need to show a little bit about what you're about, and you need to then be memorable for it as well.
And do you think a photograph reflects that?
I think a photograph can reflect that. Mm-hmm. Was it? I remember actually at one of your networking events a couple of weeks ago, one of the Metro Bank ones, I was speaking to a chap who owns a solicitor's firm, and he said, oh, you know, I don't really use the website for anything. It's kind of there, and, you know, it's all of the photos there are about 30 years old. And I was like, well, hello, my name's Chris. I'm a photographer. And he said, yeah, well, you know, they're just kind of there. And I said to him, you treat them as just kind of being there, But what do you think other people who are visiting your website think about that? You know, so you might not prioritize them, but other people will prioritize them. And they'll learn their lessons about what you stand for by the way you present yourself on the internet. And so you can make of that as you will, right? You don't have to do anything about it. But then why would anybody sort of treat you and your business seriously? Whereas what you could do, you know, if you're optimistic, if you've got an eye for growth, if you want some lead generation, then you could have a think about how you present yourself, not just in the copy on your website, but people are going to look at the visuals on your website and your marketing far before they read the copy. Mm. And put some effort into that. People will only read the copy if they like what they see. And that's as much. It's funny, you talk to website designers who are always the first port of call with people who want to think about their marketing first. And they'll go and get a nice website done and they'll spend the money on that. And then the website designer will turn around to the person and say, so what are you putting on the website? And they go, oh, right. Well, I need some copy, don't I? And they go, yes. And they'll go and speak to a copywriter and spend some money on getting some good copyright. And so the website will look good and it'll sound right, but people are likely to completely skip over it if it doesn't have something that people will want to look at. People are ultimately quite fickle when it comes to spending their time mm-hmm. on the internet. And the reason why TikTok, for example, right, I'm not just wanging on about photography, like there's evidence for this as well. The reason why TikTok is so good is because it shows people immediately exactly what they want. And you can flick through seeing exactly what they want. And it's, in TikTok's case, kind of inane, right? It's just like videos of cats and dancing and whatever. But on your website, you might want to catch somebody's attention with some visual imagery, some photos of the people who matter most in your company. And that's the people who work in it. So, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's like LinkedIn. And it can extend much more broadly beyond just website photography. So, I mean, like, I think the people page, that's important. And it's almost a sort of sign of disrespect for the people who work in the company if they're not represented on the website, because they are the people who are making the company what it is. It's not the HR policy. It's not, you know, it's the people who are doing the work. But that treats the photography there as a sort of pro forma, like it's necessary, but it can go so much more broadly. It can make up the sort of foundation of marketing in general. So some of the companies that do this best, particularly like, you know, law firms and solicitors who'll have photos of the people who are doing the work on the background of marketing materials, which then has the copy in front of it. So you get like nice smiling solicitor in the background, and then if it'll have been shot to one side, so there's perhaps like a third of the image which is blank space, and then you'll have the writing where then they'll talk about, you know, the particular achievement or whatever it is that the firm or the person has done. So you've got the engaging visuals and you've got the text at the same time, and it'll stand out much, much more strongly than just a block of text, which nobody's going to read.
Mm. People don't recognise the power of websites, do they? I mean, Thackeray is actually a really, really good. We worked with Thackeray doing the social media for some years, and they're really good at having them up-to-date photographs, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Because at the end of the day, that's the first impression that people have of the firm and the individuals.
Mm.
And you've got to get that first impression right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it'll stick. People yeah. will either notice it yeah. as being rubbish and third rate, or mm. notice it for being excellent. It's the colour scheme and the people.
Yeah, the all-round, the design, the ease of navigation around the place, yeah. making sure you have the up-to-date headshots rather than it being a 20-year-old one and then...
Or staff that have now left.
Exactly.
That's, so. You know, because that must be an ever, that something you've constantly having to look at is, you know, I mean, even people maybe who are off on maternity leave or, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Because it's constantly changing, especially with a big company. It was about 200 staff you've got there.
Yeah, near enough, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a large company, so it's important all those things are up to date.
I think that there's something slightly beyond the up-to-dateness of it, though, right? Because if it was just to do with how recent the photos are, then I would probably not have a job, and it would probably be, you know, you could just point an iPhone at somebody. So there's like the technical quality of the photography as well, which I suppose is important. But then, you know, AI is really good, and we could get technically excellent AI'd photos, and that would be fine. But I think where really good photography is really important is in saying something with the photos, right? Is knowing how to present yourself and what you want to say through photography.
Mm.
So, for example, you know, the person listening to this will be able to imagine, you know, a line of people who are shot face on to the camera, you know, staring straight at it and perfectly lit, and, you know, everyone's done their makeup and whatnot, so it's technically excellent and immediately forgettable. Whereas if you have a photograph of somebody where they perhaps mean something, where they've got some emotion showing, maybe, and you can think of different emotions, you know, what do you want to say in your photo? Is it optimism? Is it ambition? Is it authority? Is it niceness? Is it pleasantness? Is it relaxing, right? You don't want a therapist, for example, in a photo to look authoritative. Mm. But you might want a lawyer to look authoritative. You might not want the family lawyer to look authoritative. I'm looking at the family lawyer. You might want the corporate lawyer to look authoritative, and you might want the family lawyer to, I don't know, right? And that would be a conversation that we'd have. But I think if it was just up to date, then I think every headshot photographer since the dawn of AI would be out of the job. But the reason why you go to a portrait photographer rather than AI or an iPhone or something like that is because what's said with imagery is far more important than the technical ability of the camera.
You took a photograph of me with the bill.
Yes,
and that photograph. So we, our event steward. Actually, it's Laura that rings the bell, but I ring a bell if Laura's not there. So we ring a bell to say to people, "Next speaker, please." Mm. So it's that cut off. So everyone gets 3 minutes to answer questions, talk about their business, and then after that 3 minutes, we ring the bell. And Chris captured me really actually beautifully. I had so many comments on that photograph.
Oh, really? Wonderful.
So many fantastic comments on that photograph. And I think it's because the fact that I was holding the bell resonated with so many people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, absolutely. You know, I was ringing a bell in my old business and sure. I'm ringing a bell in this business. But something else I wanted to bring up as well is I remember you got a lot of companies that may be born in the 70s, 80s, you know, when websites maybe weren't as important. And I remember looking at an air conditioning company and their homepage had an air conditioning unit on the front.
Right.
And I remember saying to the gentleman that owned the company, "Why have you got a picture of an air conditioning unit?" I said, "Nobody even, it just looks like an ugly box. Why don't you have a picture of people looking cool and cozy or, you know, because air conditioning isn't just air conditioning now, it's heating as well, isn't it? So why don't you have that, you know, the view of people looking comfortable and being able to work?"
Yes, that's exactly it. I'm kicking myself because I can't remember the quote off by heart. Hopefully one of you will be able to remind me. But it's the quote by a marketing person. It's quite famous. It says, "People don't buy hammers. They buy filled holes."
Ah.
Right? And your example of the air conditioning unit is exactly right. People don't care about the air conditioning unit. They care about the fact that they're cool.
Mm.
And you want to, in your marketing, demonstrate that you know, people are satisfied with the product that you provide or the service that you provide, and or you want to indicate that people will be. And so the bell is exactly right, right? Mm-hmm. Because when people have in their mind the fact that you're ringing the bell, right? It's the next opportunity to meet somebody, or the indication that they've just successfully put their point across for the 3 minutes in the Synergy meeting, right? Mm-hmm.
I might make that my main profile
just
picture.
Thinking, yeah.
I know, so was I. I don't know why.
Well, you've got a new logo there as well, I think.
I know.
Right? If you built that bell into the whole thing. Although it's not a bell, it's a cowbell. Why did you change from the ringy ding ding? Did it get broken or something?
Yes, one of them got broken I couldn't find. I have got the other ones, yeah.
I mean, it's hilarious.
I know.
It like clangs.
You broke the cowbell the other night, didn't you? Swung off and it was just like, oh.
If there are any bell suppliers listening to this, Linda's in the market. She needs 30,000 because she breaks one a week.
They are Synergy bells.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
And
I need
different
them
types
right
of bells.
Yeah, different types of. Yeah, there's a branded bell market.
Absolutely.
Branded merch.
Oh dear. So, Can you just tell us a little bit, we come back to the photography, but tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up getting into photography.
Sure. When I was in school, I was predicted grades well enough to go and study law at Oxbridge. And then I balls that up. So I didn't go and
I never had that problem, don't worry. No.
I mean, it's a really, really good... That in itself, I think, is a good reason to not give up on your dreams. or not fall foul to, like, predictions of destiny. Anyway, so I didn't go and do that. I studied politics at Kent. And I remember I did politics and international relations with a year in Japan. Went off to Japan, bought a camera just before I went off and took a load of photos in Japan. And that's probably where it all started. But I didn't get into photography then. In my fourth year, I remember my supervisor walking down the corridor of Grimmond College at the University of Kent. I remember it exactly. And he said, "You know, Chris, I think you might be a philosopher." And I went, "Okay, cool. That sounds like a good idea." Because I really like political philosophy. I won't bore listeners about sort of why. Well, I will. Yeah. I studied politics and I found the politics quite interesting, but what I found more interesting was how we know things and the study of what's called in philosophy epistemology, so the study of knowledge. How is it that the way we know things is correct, and how do we know that the things we know are correct about the world? And I always found that quite interesting. And I got really frustrated at university that a lot of people seem very certain of themselves. When part and parcel of academic study is like asking questions about how we know things. To the extent that when I was doing my master's later on, I put together a petition because the skills methods module that we learned ignored philosophical methods of inquiry. And I thought it was quite important that we start asking questions about this knowledge. So he said, "You know, Chris, I think you might be a philosopher." And I took that to heart and then went and did a master's and a PhD in political and social thought. And then I taught political and social thought and sociology and bits of law at Kent. Really, whatever I could get people to pay me to teach, because the way sort of higher education works is that when you're going into it, is you're supposed to do a PhD and then pay your sort of penance in, I guess, hourly paid lecturing. So you do some teaching, whatever modules you can. You publish a couple of articles, you publish a book, and then you'll get your full time job. And that's what I was told when I was doing my PhD and on the run up. So I did the PhD, published the book, published a couple of articles, and I 6 years later I didn't have a full time job, and the straw that broke the camel's back was when I applied to a job and had a 9,000 word application. It took me a week to write. It was longer than my master's thesis. And I got desk rejected. I mean, fine, whatever. And I asked for feedback. And I got a generic email from the HR department saying, "We don't give feedback for desk rejections." And I emailed back. I said, "I've just written you a 9,000 word application. I want some feedback." And the prof in charge of the hiring process said, "Well, 66 people applied for this job. So, you know, sorry, try next time."
I wonder if you read all, I wonder if everyone put in 9,000 words, and I wonder if you read all 9,000 words at every one of them.
Exactly. It was just such a farce.
Yeah.
So it was at that moment I thought, right, I've got to leave higher education. This is silly. So a mate of mine in London had said, who is now a very successful headshot photographer and a former academic, said, "Well, you know, why don't you make your side hustle your main hustle and your main hustle your side hustle?" And I that was a good idea. So I sort of went around looking at different careers, and I said, "No, actually, I do like taking photos. I don't have an internal monologue. I've got a condition called anorelia. So everything's quiet in my head, and I'm a very visual person. So I thought, why not? Let's just indulge that." And I trained myself over sort of 3 years how to take photos, how to run a business, how to start marketing. And I went full-time self-employed 14 months ago, January the 1st, 2025.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So so we started in October 2024. So you literally started just after us.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I'm still working from home, but you have your own studio now, don't you?
I do have my own studio, yes.
So tell us about that.
So that was opened at the beginning of January. It's on Tontine Street in Folkestone. It's called Folkestone Studio. And I run that with a business partner who's a silent business partner. It's all very mysterious. but he's a lovely guy who's a big ticket sort of ad photographer in London. And it's quite nice because he uses it for what he calls his mad professor lighting experiments in the studio. And I use it for headshots and portraits. So it's it. Oh, and we also hire it out. So it's a lovely event space. Mm. It's in the Wedge. On I mean, you've been, haven't you, Linda? Mm. It's on two floors. So the ground floor is this beautiful sort of Victorian room. It's a story and a half tall, and the whole side is covered in glass windows. So you've got tons and tons of natural light, and it's just white with some of my art now on the walls and whatnot. And then in the basement, there's another studio, which is all pitch black. So that's for artificial light. And you can hire both of those out for events or for photography and stuff like that. So that's Folkestone Studio. And I work both in the studio with clients who come to see me and with different firms around the place. So I've got a portable studio that I can rock up and make myself hidden in a corner somewhere and take photos of the team.
How big can a photograph be? Presumably, it can, how big can a photograph be? I'm just thinking of your walls.
How big do you need it to be?
Well,
photo of you projected onto the side of one of the walls.
Not me. But I've seen some lovely photographs. Obviously, you've got some lovely photographs of someone on LinkedIn, a lady with a tattoo. If you had sort of photographs of, people like that on the walls, I think it'd look really good.
Yeah, so I've got eight A4 photos of people on the walls that I just put up over the weekend, and I've just taken delivery of an A1 portrait, which I'll put in the window. Mm. If anyone needs an A0 photo of them for some reason, I mean, I can do that no problem. Otherwise, I'll just hire a camera. I mean, yeah, it's a question just of the right tools for the job.
I had my mum had a photograph where we all used to hang above the fireplace when we were little, and we always thought the eyes followed us everywhere we went. Yeah. And that's a good photograph, isn't it?
It's a great photograph.
Yeah, when the eyes follow you. And then I actually had a photograph done when I was younger, and somebody drew a picture of this photograph, and I didn't know that they had. And I walked past Woolwich in Maidstone, and I walked past and I went, "That's me."
Lovely.
I was with my husband. And he ended up buying the drawing.
Wonderful.
So it's drawing of me that was taken of a photograph.
Lovely.
So, yeah.
When I was in Japan, if anyone's been to Canterbury, and you'll know the bridge over the river in the middle of town. And I used to, when I was doing my master's, I used to row river tours up and down that river for a few years. And when I was in Japan, I went to a random bar right in the middle of the city, absolutely nothing special about it. And there was a photo of that bridge on the wall in that pub, and I talked to the guy who owned the pub in my broken Japanese at the time, and sure enough, he'd taken that photo several years ago.
Wow.
And it just shows the power, like the power of a good photograph.
Yes,
you see it all the time, and what's great is that it's not about the technology, it's about like the connection that the person has with the subject. So if you think about like that photo of Winston Churchill where the photographer's taken the cigar out of the guy's mouth, so Churchill's really angry. It's called The Tiger. It's one of the most famous photographs. Or that photo of Munro over the Great, or that photo of Thatcher on the tank, right? There are just some key iconic photographs and it's got nothing to do with the technology or the fancy camera. It's just about sort of getting it right. And I love focusing on trying to get, photographs.
Oh, Linda with the bell. I really feel famous.
With the bell.
but that's the wonderful thing about it, isn't it? It's so evocative because you're capturing a precise moment.
Yes, yes.
Whether it's an emotion, an action, a location.
Yeah.
And for someone looking at that, that will evoke something in them, or it'll be iconic generally or something. So that's why it's so powerful, isn't
it? Yes, it is. Mm. It is, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. So what I've done in the last sort of couple of years, I've tried to focus on sort of, I don't think colour or really imagery got any better since about 1500s in Renaissance Italy. So I use that as a lot of inspiration for a lot of my photographs and portraiture. I don't actually think that a lot of business people want
Renaissance fine art portraiture. And so I think my website, it's...
We're worrying about our age already. Don't do that to us. Yeah,
right. I mean, we could always give it a go and let you know.
Well, I mean, I'm here for it. That's so what I'm going to do is, I'm spending the next sort of couple of months focusing on slightly breezier, slightly... more, it's still intimate, still, I think, evocative, emotionally evocative photography, but slightly less shadowy. If you make your way over to the website, you'll find it. It's very intense. And then in the next couple of months, I'm focusing specifically on slightly more sort of branding-focused photography, which I hope will be, yeah, which I hope will be of interest to businesses.
So you're rebranding, aren't you? What's made you decide to do that?
Yeah, good question. So... I think there was a disconnect between what my website said and between the way my photography ultimately went. I've been doing it for 5 years, and within, you know, if anyone does anything for 5 years, the first little bit of time is spent learning how to do it, and then the rest of it is sort of honing it and changing it with your preferences and doing it consciously. And I think now I'm doing photography that I really like. I think I've settled into a sort of practice that I enjoy doing, and I've got a command over what I'm doing. Whereas in the first couple of years, you know, you're learning and you're sort of building things up. Mm. And a lot of what my website said was left over from the first couple of years. So there was a mismatch, and I think people could probably see that on the website. So at the moment, I'm rebranding so that what I do now is accurately reflected in, I think, the way that I talk about myself. And if anyone's been through a rebranding exercise, they'll know that it's really difficult, because when you're in a business and you're doing it, it's difficult to sort of see how other people see it, particularly, I think, in creative businesses. It's difficult to understand from an outsider's perspective how that's being seen. Mm. And so, I mean, big shout out to the Good Stuff people. Helen and James were absolutely fantastic in helping me, yeah, reflect on what it is that I'm doing, how it's seen by other people, and really why it is that I do what it is that I do, which allows me to talk about it with you know, the energy that I have, because I think it is important. But sort of understanding exactly what it is that is important about what I do, that's what required a bit of help. Yeah, that's why I rebranded.
Mm. I mean, I don't think everyone does realise how important photography is, do you? I mean, do you get some people in a big company like yours saying, no, I don't have my photo done?
I think inevitably, but I mean, as we said a little bit earlier, it's that first impression,
yeah,
that it creates. So it is very, very important.
Yeah.
And then your journey there, Chris, it's all part of that evolution, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And keeping it all up to date and moving in. And I think with the branding point, I think when people are arming and ahhing about whether to rebrand or not, there's always that tension, isn't there? Because they'll think, well, this is the brand we've had for goodness knows how long. This is what people associate us with. Now we're looking at changing it to something else. Mm. How will that go down? And sometimes I think some people can be held back a little bit by a concern about how it will actually go down. Will it be successful, or should we just stick with what we've had for goodness knows how long? But yeah, I think as part of the evolution, you have to be doing it, don't you?
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. And there will be a reason why rebranding feels necessary. And I suppose if you're providing a service, it's because the way you're talking about the service that you provide doesn't come through. And that's terrifying if you know you're providing the service and it doesn't, and somebody complains about it because that's not what they were promised. And I think if you're a creative, it's important because, you know, if somebody talks about what they are doing and it doesn't look like that, then there's clearly a mismatch and people will get confused and go away. So that I think it's important to commit to that rebranding and recognize when something's wrong and just roll with it. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. So you've done a couple of events for us now. Yeah. So event photography is one of the things that that you do. So what types of events do you, I mean, obviously ours is a corporate event. Yeah. What types of events do you like to do photography for?
Ooh, I really like events. I really like, so when I was an academic, I'm sort of recovering academic now, but what, some of the some of the stuff that lasts over. I've studied the concept of the event when I was at university. I worked on metaphysics, and the concept of the event was part and parcel of it. And so I get really nerdy when I'm thinking about events, and I try and bring that out in photography, because events are made of lots of different things. So you've got the overall structure and the sort of brand identity of the events. Then you've got the individual relationships that are going on within it. Mm. And you've got the sort of institutional apparatus around it. So, you know, literally chairs and tables and how they're laid out and windows and how light works and all of that. And so I try to get all of that working in the photography. And so lots of different events offer that in different ways. It's really interesting. So you'll see on my website some like immersive theatrical events, which I've taken in Tenterton at the Grapevine. So there's a wonderful event called After Midnight, which is put on by some of the Tenterton Operatic and Dramatic Society players. It's separate, but you know, it's the same sort of people, and it's immersive. So you walk into the Grapevine, and they'll welcome you in character, and then they'll sing some songs, and everyone will get a bit drunk and have a good time. Really, really good nights. So I love shooting that sort of theatrical stuff. But then corporate events likewise are really interesting, because it matters. You know, if you take it seriously, and I do, people are there because they care about it, and whatever that event might be, whether it's about making money, or recently I shot an event in Buckinghamshire on flood damage prevention.
Oh.
Right? Not on a particularly glamorous thing, but everyone there was lovely because, you know, they were all there in good faith. And when they were talking about the things that they're passionate about, like, clearly that's important.
Mm.
And my house happened to flood 4 months ago, so it was particularly important.
I mean, the thing I like about the photography you do for us is you do capture moments, but not just the moments of the whole event. So, you know, with like the photograph, we've got little mint tins that we give away as a promotional. So it was a big photograph of lots of people holding the mint tins, and all of us were in it. You were in that one, were you? I can't remember.
I remember.
But then also capture photographs of people, their faces while they're, so capturing pictures of people when they're networking and the laughter or the intent listening. Now, when Chris takes a photograph, you can see people listening, which is one of the things that we say about our brand. Our brand is, when you come networking with us, listen, because it's really important that you listen to what people are saying.
Yeah.
I mean, when we first started, I felt like I wanted to go and clip some people around the ear. I remember seeing someone with a phone, and I was like, ah.
I must have a photo of you doing that somewhere. that's my blackmail material.
But, I mean, it was really good because it captured every part of it. It captured the laughter. When someone said something, the whole table's bursting out laughing. You know, it captures the intensity of people listening to someone, the focus of someone listening to someone else talking, which I think is really important.
I'm delighted to hear you say that, because I think intensity is exactly the word that I go for. It's exactly what I try and capture.
And that's what you get, and that's important for us, because obviously our website needs to reflect that, because when we're promoting our events, we need to have those images that people can see. Oh, it looks like they're listening. Does that actually happen at networking events? Yes, it does. You know, and that's the difference. They can hear, you know, and you can see all of that as well. It just really does portray the event.
Oh, great.
So, which is fantastic. So the corporate photography, how is that different from headshot photography or event photography? Explain the difference.
Yeah, I mean, like between headshot photography, it's just a question of scale. So, you know, if somebody needs a headshot, I've got one package so they can just come into the studio. It takes half an hour. I understand who they are, where they're going, what they need the headshot for. They'll have a cup of tea and it'll be in and out, and they can get back to work.
Okay.
I've got another package, the signature package, which is an unlimited photo shoot, again, for one person. And then we can get a whole range of photos that they'll need for whatever the purpose is. So if they're an actor, you know, their portfolio, they're a business person.
Is that
person.
What my friend Jane had?
That's exactly what your friend Jane had.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, your friend Jane came in for some dating photography. Mm-hmm. And actually, that wasn't in the studio. We walked around Great Chart, where I live, and... and that was lovely. So yeah, that was a signature thing. The corporate shoots, I mean, that's just ostensibly a headshot shoot, but for a business. And I'll often go to their place of work and set up in a room that they'll dedicate. And you can build in different parts, different things to that if needs be. So a lot of companies, I'll do a set of headshots and then maybe some ambient photos of where people work.
Yes, I was just thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah, that can look quite nice. And if they've got a particularly nice building, so some architectural shots and things like that. So yeah, that's what I mean by corporate photography. Or like board days, if you have like I shot the Magistrates Association board away day. And, you know, again, that's a bit like event photography, I guess. Mm. But they'll put photos on that for their report to the Board of Trustees. And that's a nice way of livening up a particularly dull document otherwise. But also it shows the important thing about all institutions, which is the people that form part of
it. I'm just thinking some of our venues. I mean, you know, when you think of the venues and the range of events that they do, And sometimes they are not reflected on their website at all.
No.
You know, so would they have to get permission from the people?
Yes. I mean, in really all events should have a disclaimer somewhere, which can just be as simple as a piece of paper on the wall that says this event will be photographed. If you have any problems, make these known to the organizer. And often what will happen is the organizer will have like some red dots, you know, and they'll just stick a red dot on the person. And if the photographer sees the red dot, then they'll know to crop that person out of the photo or something like that.
Okay, so note to self, get lots of red dots.
Get lots of red. Hopefully not too many people are going to use them because it's a pain taking them out. It's nothing worse than when you get a cracking shot and then you see one red dot and you go, no. Do I have to shop someone else's face onto? No, you don't do that. So it just goes in the bin.
That'd be funny, wouldn't
it's just
it?
Just five Lindas in a photo. Something's got her on.
Oh dear. And obviously stock photography. So we used a lot of that because we had no choice when I was running the social media business.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of companies haven't got the photography that we need to use. So we're having to use stock photography, especially, funny enough, with a lot of corporates.
Yeah. I mean, it's an acceptable bridge, I think, stock photography, isn't it? And I heard it in the tone that you were talking about that with. You almost don't want to say it because it's acceptable. But, you know, if you don't want to run an acceptable business, you know, any business owner is not there to be acceptable or okay or manageable or that'll do. If you're serious about it, if you're serious about making a difference, and according to all marketing literature, the only way of commanding a market and your revenue stream downstage from your lead generation is by making a difference, standing out and being noticed. And so stock photography all over your marketing is not going to allow you to do that.
No, that's true. Oh, wow. Amazing. Brilliant. Right. Okay. I want to talk to you about the blogs you're writing as well. So you've written a few blogs. Why people buy from people, not picture perfect stock models. Was that what we were just talking about?
I think so. Yeah. And that's ostensibly that blog article. Yeah. You want to stand out. You want to be noticed, not passed over. All lead generation comes downstream. Sorry, all revenue comes downstream from lead generation. And there are only two ways of generating leads actively. One way is, of course, passively through repeat business. And that's the easiest way of doing that. Repeat business, it's the least expensive. And then you and I specialize in the other two ways. So one is by going out and meeting people and networking. And the other way is through marketing. And so because all revenue comes downstream from lead generation and people buy from people they trust, the best way of engendering that is having photographs that speak to people of the people who are actually involved in that business.
I mean, I know I was in marketing, but when I fell into We Do Social Media, I didn't ask for it. It just fell into my lap. And it quite shocked me, actually, because I didn't really know how I ended up there. So I remember my daughter, when she first came into the business, and she said to me, "Mum, do you know what marketing is?" And I was like, "Well, isn't it sales?" And she was like, "No, it is not sales. Marketing is completely different. You know, it's brand awareness." And then when she started explaining it to me, I feel for Synergy, I feel like I've got it.
Sure.
It took me a little while. I feel like I've got it now. You know, I understand actually what it is, and it's getting that brand out there, that trust, and building that up over. I know we've only been going 18 months, but, you know, building it up over the years. And photography is a major part of that because we're, you know, dealing with so many companies. If we don't look professional, how are we going to attract professional companies?
But what's really nice about your branding is that it's professional and people know that you're there to help. But because you are still quite, I guess, an important and what's the word I'm looking for? You're foregrounded in Synergy's marketing and you're really personable. It's got that sort of nice professional touch with the blue and the white and the professional logo, but you've still got, you know, you being personable at the same time. So I think you're right. I think you have nailed your branding and your marketing, but it is really difficult and it does take time to do so.
But also it's got to get to the stage where it can move on to somebody else doing it, because you know, that's where it's got to move on to. Sure. So, you know, it's then getting the right people on board, isn't it? That
good luck.
Well, we're copying someone else's model, actually, so hopefully it'll work. You've put here another blog, why business photography isn't a luxury, it's a smart investment.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's, I can't remember what I wrote in that. Go read it. The reason why the word investment is there is because it's not an ancillary cost, right? So I think talking about going back to what I was talking about earlier with the website, the copy, the photography sort of pipeline that a lot of businesses often assume should be the right order. Photography is there, the sort of stuck on thing right at the end. Mm-hmm. It's the thing that you might like to have, but actually stock photography is there or AI photography is there. Just in case, and maybe we'll get round to the photography. But if it's the case that people buy from people that they trust, anyone can write that copy, particularly copywriters. Not everyone can write good copy. It's a really, really difficult skill. Mm. Hats off to copywriters. Mm. But in order to get to that copy, first of all, you've got to gain people's attention, and people will remember the experience that they have on your website far and beyond what they've actually read, right? It's like people remember the first 5 minutes of an experience and the last 5 minutes of the experience. So if you know anything about like marketing, you know that your touch point has to be excellent and the moment that you leave somebody has to be excellent, and you can do what you like with the rest of the experience virtually because then nobody's going to remember it. So it's exactly the same with the imagery. You have to get somebody's attention at the get-go, and you have to leave them with something worthwhile and meaningful that they're going to remember well. And if you don't, and this is why it's a meaningful investment, then it's all for naught and they'll forget you. So photography is not an ancillary cost. It's not something that can be just sort of apologized away for or replaced with stock imagery. It's an investment, and it will reap its rewards down the line, because people will know who you are and what you stand for, and they'll remember it. Mm. That's key.
How do people get that when you're explaining it to them like that? That, you know, the power of the image, the power of the photo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I told you earlier on about the guy whose website I talked about. Mm. He said, well, that just exists. It's just a thing. So I'm not convinced that there are clearly some people who don't. I think a lot of other people would say, well, you're the photographer, you would say that. And like, you know, okay, fine, I get that. I'm as cynical about marketing as the next person. But every now and again, you know, if you can put it right, then I think people do understand it. It's just maybe not something that they've thought about. It's why I talk about those photos that you know you can remember, you know, the Thatcher, the Churchill and things like that. Yeah, so I'm not too. There's also a lot of visual noise around us, right? So people will often go, yeah, well, you say that visual photography and images are important, but are they really? Because I can't remember half the stuff that I see. And my response to that is, that's the point. That's why it's so important, because there are some photos that I bet you can remember. And those are the standout ones that you need to show yourself off with. Or even if it's just for you, you know, then maybe to have for posterity. A lot of people who come to see me for the portrait work come not for business reasons at all, but because they want to remember themselves looking in a particular way. We were talking just in the break, right? I think there are certainly some people who've been through the Herbalife process or any kind of fitness or nutrition process who will have seen such a change in themselves, and hopefully they'll be really proud of themselves for doing it. They might want to save that for posterity. I know a lot of people who go for boudoir shoots do so for exactly that reason. Yeah,
because, I mean, it could be something where, you know, it's a benefit at the end to sort of say, right, so, you know, you can now have a photo shoot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And they'd want to have it. They'd want to show themselves, even just for themselves, to themselves, them having gone through a process. But other people, you know, women who've gone through mastectomies, and it's the really challenging process of dealing with breast cancer, and they go through that and they wrestle with their internal self-image and what they worry other people's perception would be. And at the end of that process, when hopefully they've reconciled themselves with whatever their decision may be, that can also be a really meaningful time to go and sort of mark that point and get that recorded with something.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I'd like to ask you, how do people, if they want event photography or headshots or corporate photography, how do they get hold of you, please?
Yeah, so my website's chrishenryphotography.com. I'm on Instagram, chrishenry.photography, and TikTok, but you'll have to search for me. I can't remember what that is, or LinkedIn. Yeah. My phone number, if you just want to give me a call and have a chat, is 07815-088-409.
That's brilliant. Thanks so much, Chris. So have either of you got any questions for Chris?
Oh, we've wanged on about photography for more than enough.
What's your favourite photo that you've ever taken?
I've got one as well. Yeah,
go on. Oh, okay. My favourite photo that I've ever taken, oh, it's so difficult, is probably the photo that I took of a woman called Mary. Mary is... will be known to those who go to chamber networking. I think she still goes to that. And she runs the Beyond Our Dreams podcast with Richard. And
I saw that photograph, yes.
Yeah. And so the two of them came to me for their headshots for the podcast. And Mary I don't know how to describe it. There's a very slight possibly deformity to one side of her face. And she's always been, she said, very worried about it, unhappy with photos. And she left me this wonderful... This was the woman who saw the photo on the screen and she started crying. And she said, I've gotten over a fear of photography that I've had since I was a child. And it's basically just because I turned the camera around so that it was in a particular way. So it framed her. I think that was probably my favourite photo.
Oh, well done.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was a lovely photograph.
What was yours?
Mine was of my mum, actually. So mum had, you know, quite a character. And I used to take her down to the Crescent Turner Hotel for Sunday lunch. And we went down there one particular time. She'd been sort of ill on and off. And we went down there and it was a beautiful, beautiful day. And I said to her, Mum, I said, what do you want to eat? She said, I think we'll go for the set menu and look, we'll have a glass of wine. And then I took a photograph of her holding the glass of wine and a little face of like, yes, I've got this glass of wine. She was like holding it for dear life. It was so funny. But it's a fantastic photograph because she's just like, I've got this.
What a beautiful photograph.
It was lovely. It was lovely. So
I've started wanting to use the word beauty on my website, and I'm a bit worried about using the word beauty on the website.
Why?
And in my marketing. And it's because I think people will think that I'm talking about, you know, oh, Chrissy just wants to take photos of, you know, beautiful women. And it's not like that at all. The old Greek understanding of beauty had nothing to do with, you know, aesthetic beauty in that particular kind of way, you know, in this sort of archetypal traditional way. But that is such a beautiful moment to be captured in a beautiful photo. It's stunning. Yeah, I'd love to talk more like that.
Yeah, it's lovely. And the thing is, obviously, I've had a good teacher.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Because you taught me how to centre everything and We did the training.
Your mum, you still like a set, met you in a glass of wine.
No, I'm talking about the photograph. So I had that training before I went.
Oh, wonderful.
So yeah, it makes a difference. Do you take a good photo? You've got to, really, because you're taking photographs of your clients all the time.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a David Bailey. No. But, you know.
Or a Chris Henry.
You know. I sort of muscle my way through. But I think the best picture I ever took was of the late Queen.
No way.
Yeah, and I've got a real close-up.
Wow. Oh, wonderful.
Where was that taken?
Chatham Dockyard.
Right.
Yeah, oh, I literally was there with my daughter, because the school, they could pick so many kids out of the class, and we went, and, I mean, it's been a bit of a joke in the family, because I was literally told the day before, so I wasn't prepared, I didn't get flowers or anything, I felt awful. And the Queen got out of the car, and we just thought she was going to go straight up the steps and straight in the building, but she didn't. She then started walking along the railings where we was all standing.
Oh, wow.
And then she stopped, like, just to the side of me, and that's when I took the shot. And then she came in front of me, I got all flustered, and the kids all laugh at me now because I put the posh voice on and said, oh, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, you didn't, did you?
And I said, thank you so much for coming to Chatham. And she just went, that's quite all right. But it was just the way I sort of, you know, thank you so much for coming to Chatham. But yeah.
Oh, funny.
But that's the, I mean, I had that blown up. So I've got that in my loft.
Oh, wonderful.
So every now and again, I'll have a look at that. And if anyone mentions the Queen, because I love the Queen, and I go, oh, I've got a photo of her. You can see they sort of like their face is just like, oh, God.
Wonderful.
Stuart, what's yours?
Well, on the occasions I remember to actually get my finger out of the way, so that's not appearing in it. I think actually it's a few years ago when my daughters were a bit younger. They were, I think at the time, they were probably about 2 and 5. I mean, they're 18 and 15 now, so several years ago. But they were just playing on the floor. They were lying side by side. And I just thought, that's a really nice thing to see. So I lay down opposite them, and they were in front of me, side by side. And then one of them said something. I can't remember what it was they said, but they both found that absolutely hilarious.
Aww.
And they both started laughing. But as they were laughing, they both tilted their shoulders away from each other. And I managed to get a picture of them both laughing, but sort of turned away from each other like that while they were lying on the floor. And I think that's yeah, probably the best one that I've managed.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because it's all such fantastic memories as well.
Yeah,
and absolutely. That's really, I think, you know, the problem with the modern phone is that, I mean, I've got albums and albums of photographs.
Yes,
of you know, going back, but people don't print them anymore, do they?
Oh, no.
Change their phone and lose them. Videos as well. I lost one of my grandson, you know, toddling along with a full nappy, and you know, it was so funny seeing him. But I haven't got that anymore.
With all of your contacts, you've not got a tech guy who'll back up your phone to the cloud?
I probably have, actually.
You probably do.
I've probably got several.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, we've actually got 5 minutes, but we're going to play out with the Lighthouse family. I just want to say thank you to all of my guests.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, really good fun.
So yes. That's good. So anyone listening, you know, please remember, if you're getting a divorce, you can go to Stuart.
Not for the other reason.
No, absolutely. Other services are available as well.
If you want to get yourself healthy and fit, then it's you can go along to Paula at Lighthouse Nutrition, and if you want to improve your marketing and have some great headshots or event photography, then it's Chris Henry that you need to speak to. So it will be Jill Russell on the show next week, and I am on the week after. So thanks very much, everyone. That's it from us, Synergy Networking Events. We will speak to you again soon. Bye.
Hello, Kent businesses. Tired of networking events that don't deliver? Synergy Networking Events has got you covered, whether you're a networking newbie or a seasoned pro. Our events make networking a breeze. Meet other businesses without the pressure. Enjoy pre-planned seating table moves and even a buffet. All for just £20 for non-members and £10 for members. Build relationships that last and get a result on your investment.
Thank you for listening to the Business Network Show, featuring Jill Russell of the Jill Russell Consultancy and Linda Cloak, founder of Synergy Networking Events.